If we aren't doing something that matters to us, we physically, mentally, emotionally wither away. This is true. We know this from science. That's why you see a lot of old people go downhill after stopping working. All work is a form of creation. Just because you may not be in what is called creative work doesn't mean you aren't being creative with your work, because if work creates a result, you're being creative. So the creator creates man and woman. He creates us to contribute. And so I absolutely believe, because our creator was creative, he also created us to create, in other words, to contribute to the world through the world of work. This is where the question comes that every person on the planet at some point in their life starts to wrestle. What should I do with my life? Why am I here? All right, that is a fundamental question that nobody has to teach a person to ask.
What's up, beautiful people? Welcome back to the Thrive After Sports podcast. Got a great episode for you today with Ken Coleman, the legendary Ken Coleman. He's someone I've been following for a long time, especially as I start to branch out and help more than just retired athletes and start to help kind of, I say the general population, folks who have been laid off, folks who want to make career changes, starting to do a lot more of that work. And because of that, I lean into a lot more of Ken Coleman's work. He has a live radio show that he does. It's on YouTube as well, of course, but people call in, they ask for career advice. And Ken Coleman's a part of the Dave Ramsey Network. So if you haven't heard of Ken Coleman, I'm sure you probably heard of Dave Ramsey. And yeah, it was just a phenomenal episode. You'll hear me talk about how much I look up to Ken. I've been watching him from a distance for a long time, and I just decided to reach out, and he said he'd do the show, and we had a great interview. So I know you'll be able to take a lot from it. On that note, if you've ever gotten any value from this show, please leave us a rating or review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Like the video if you're watching on YouTube, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Please share this episode with someone who needs to hear it, especially someone who may be in a position where they're trying to figure out what's next and they want to find meaningful work in their life. You know, and who doesn't want to find meaningful work that they enjoy, right? I love you guys. Oh, one last thing. Please, 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 if you haven't done so, join the Thrive After Sports community. I'll have the link below. But also, if you just go to TajDeshawn.com, that's the hub for everything. You know, all my social media platforms are on there. By the way, follow your boy on Instagram, connect with me on LinkedIn, all that good stuff. On the top of the website, in the menu, you can click join our community, and that'll take you to the Thrive After Sports community. If you haven't joined that group, I don't know what you guys are doing. It's free. As of right now, as of the recording of this episode, the community is still free. But if you're a current athlete or an athlete in transition and you're still trying to figure it out, or if you're an athlete turned entrepreneur, you have to be in that community. It's a place where former athletes can support the current athletes coming up behind us. And it's also a place where us as former athletes turned entrepreneurs, we can network. I'm making introductions in there. Business deals are happening. A lot of good things are happening inside that community. So you don't want to miss out. Join now and stay tuned for the weekly meetups. I actually just got off of a meetup right now and some introductions were made. Partnerships are formed. I was able to get some insight and help with my business, and a few other people were able to get some insight and help too. So I'll see you inside the community. Enjoy this episode with Ken Coleman. Peace. My business, which you see behind me, Thrive After Sports, is dedicated to helping retired athletes transition into the next phase of their life after they hang up the cleats or the jersey for the last time, and to find something that they can be just as inspired by or motivated and enthusiastic about as they were when they were playing their sport. And I'm going to tell you how this all came about. So I'm going to talk your ear off for a second, and then I'm going to be quiet because I just want to let you talk for the rest of the interview. Long story short, in 2018, I started doing this type of work. Fast forward to 2019, I'm just really getting my feet wet, my first year of coaching, working with the former D1 basketball player, Kyle Wiest. Shout out to the Wiester Bunny. I know he listens to the show. And I told him that I was going to start a podcast. I started my podcast in 2019, about a year into my coaching. I said, yeah, I have this vision of, I think I want it to be kind of like a call-in show where athletes can call in and get advice. And I didn't end up going that route. That's still on the table. I may do that at some point. But he was like, yeah, you can be like Ken Coleman. And I'm like, who's Ken Coleman? So he starts sending me all these videos. Automatically, I'm hooked. I'm watching. I probably watched anything you have on YouTube. I probably watched it.
Oh, and
I watch it on double speed. So, you know, I get through all of it pretty quickly. But I'm hooked on your show. I'm getting some great advice. It's making me better at coaching. And then I grab your book. This is the book, The Proximity Principle. I know you came out with this in 2019.
Yeah.
And I know you've published two other books since then, or?
Well, no, that was the middle one. So I did one before that and one after.
That's right. Okay. When I got my hands on this book, I mean, I can't even tell you how foundational this was for me as I started to really develop as a coach. And then I started branching out outside of just working with athletes and doing career coaching for non-athletes as well. One of the things immediately when I got my hands on this book, for those of you who aren't watching on video, you can't see this, but the back of the book says you don't have to stay in a job you hate. As soon as I read that, I was like, this guy gets it. I had been feeling that way for a long time, but to see that, to have watched your videos and then see that this was the core philosophy and, you know, why you're on the mission that you're on was really, it just solidified why I admire you so much and why I was continuing and have continued to learn from you over the years. So you're very welcome. All that being said, how do you, I know this is a strange question, but rather than me introducing my guests, I like to ask my guests, how do you introduce yourself to people? How do you introduce yourself to the world these days, Ken?
Well, I'm a husband to Stacy for 25 years, and I'm a dad to three awesome teenagers, Ty, Chase, and Josie. And I'm a coach who performs on a public stage. That's how I would, that would be the quick introduction if somebody hit me really fast and, or tell me who you are and what you do. And that's what I would say. Obviously, I coach men and women to discover and do what they were created to do.
I like that. Awesome answer. And one of the things that was really cool as I was reading your book, you talked a lot about your own personal journey, which I learned a lot of that from you. It's don't just give people advice, talk about how you learned and how you implement and continue to implement this advice. And I know your journey was, there was of course some serendipity, but it was also a lot of recalibrating, adjusting, constantly questioning yourself. I have this catchphrase I came up with called keeping your antennas up. Can you just speak a little bit to that in your own personal journey of getting where you're at today to when you first started out of constantly readjusting and making moves to ultimately end up where you're supposed to be or where you want to be in life?
Yeah. You know, I love that keeping your antennas up, you know, the idea of I need to be paying attention to what I see around me, what I feel around me, the idea of if I know who I am, I know what I'm good at doing. And I know what I love to do, and I know what results matter deeply to me. I need to keep my antenna up to always be connecting, always be having conversations, learning from people who are around me, in front of me. I think so many people go through life kind of with their blinders on, and they don't pay attention to what's around them. And I think that opportunities, use the word serendipitous, which is a fantastic word earlier when we were talking. And I think that serendipity is a it's a result of awareness and being aware of what's around me all the time. Some people walk right past great opportunities because they aren't connecting with the right people. They aren't putting themselves in the right places. They aren't aware of hey, what is it that I want to do? What are the results that I care deeply about in my life? And that's a function of focus. And we know from neuroscience that we've got this thing in our brain called the reticular activating system. You've heard me talk about this. It's the camera of the brain. Whatever we are focused on, it goes out and basically takes pictures of the world around us to support what we're thinking. So let me give you an example. If I feel like I'm a victim and everybody's out to get me, and that's the thought that's in my head, I'm going to see that everywhere because my brain goes, oh, we're focused on how much of a victim we are. And so it goes and it takes pictures of that. The real world example of this that everybody's used to is when you buy a car, you end up seeing that car everywhere for about a week, you know, because it's intense focus. And the car god didn't just drop those cars down. You know, those cars were always there. You just didn't notice them. And so that's the idea. If I have an antenna that is up, in other words, I am focused on getting around the right people, getting in the right places, looking for opportunities to grow, looking for opportunities to serve, I will see all of that. And when I see all of that, I have the opportunity to be around all of that. And when I'm around all of that, that just becomes a multiplier for me in so many areas of my life.
Ken, I should have warned the listeners to get a pen and pad ready so they can take notes, because we're 2 or 3 minutes in and you're already talking about neuroscience. So you guys ready to get ready? This is going to be an episode you're going to want to listen to time and time again. So Ken, I want to do something different today. I've actually never done this during an interview. I've revisited your book time and time again, especially as I've coached more non-athletes and just taking some of the principles from it. And what I wanted to do is go through certain things that I've highlighted, because the book is packed with gems and nuggets, but there's certain little, you drop some zingers in there. There's one-liners that I constantly go back to, and I wanted to read them one by one and just kind of ask you or just get your thoughts, whatever comes to mind.
Sure.
I'll start with this one. These are some of the ones that hit me in the chest. Meeting with a mentor doesn't need to be intense, but it does need to be intentional. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's the idea that when you sit down with a mentor the first couple of times, don't overwhelm them. You know, if you're not overwhelming them, that means you're not trying to ask too much and do too much. You know, this idea that I've got to get to the mountaintop of wisdom in the first couple of meetings with a mentor, that can put a lot of pressure on you. And then that comes across to them. And so the idea is this is relational. And so I want to be intentional in my time with mentors. I want to ask questions and I want to just learn. I'm not trying to get this, you know, moment with a mentor, you know, like I'm to the mountain with this czar or this, that's the wrong word, but the, what's the word of the Svengali up there at the top of the mountain and the mysterious robe and all that. That's what that statement means. It's like, look, mentorship is just about somebody who's been there, done that, and they've been doing it longer than you, and they've got a lot of knowledge, facts, and they've got a lot of wisdom, which is insight into maybe some things, and just, hey, just be there and ask good questions, receive what they've got to say. Don't try to do too much. Don't try to get too much out of them. You know, that's where people get weirded out, you know. Just be relaxed and be intentional to learn.
Mm. Just on that note, by the way, great singing voice. The yeah, angelic singing was, I wasn't
expecting. I had not warmed up, by the way. I had not done my scales, you know.
Yeah, that was just a dry attempt that it was actually, you know, pretty good. It was in key. So, but when you talk about preparing or going into the situation, being relaxed and being yourself, and like you said, not trying to overwhelm yourself or overwhelm the mentor, are there any things that you, any tips that you can give about how you do recommend going into that conversation and doing some prep work?
Yeah, just focus on what it is you need to know right now. Hmm. You know, I think people try to go in and they ask these big open-ended questions that are about something 10 years from now. And I don't think that's a good question. I would walk in my early relationship with a mentor, and I've got this specific time with them and I want to get the most out of it. So I'm going to be looking at what is it that I need to know right now? What are the most important things in my life that I need some, again, knowledge? So I want to get some facts from them, or wisdom. I want to get their opinion on something. And that's what I would be doing. And I would go high priority stuff. And I'd ask them, all right, hey, I got some things I want to ask. You know, I got this situation. I'd love your opinion. That's wisdom. I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think? What do you know about this? And again, we're getting some knowledge there. So very specific. They're going to feel valuable and thus be able to give you as much value as possible.
Mm. Awesome. Okay. So this next one, I want to preface this before I read this. The thing I like about this one the most is that you can apply this at any stage, whether that means you're trying to find clarity or you're in the midst of locking in that first opportunity or you're well into your career, just continuing to grow. You said, if you help people win, they will open the door of opportunity for you. Can we talk about that one?
Yeah. I mean, if you help other people win, they will feel indebted to you, although they don't need to, but that's just the nature of a good person. When someone helps me, I want to look for an opportunity to help them. I want to return it. And I think that's the issue. And so if I'm all out there all the time looking for opportunities to say yes to other people who need my help to help them win, I'm going to help them. And that is a deposit into my future, meaning that will come back to me. It's the law of reciprocity. You know, Zig Ziglar made this famous. If you help other people get what they want in life, you'll get what you want. Now, that does not mean I do something for you, so now I expect you to do something for me. It's just, I'm going to pay it forward. Was a lovely movie with the name of that was the title of the movie, but I'm going to go do something good because I have an opportunity to do something good and I'm going to give of myself. And so when I help other people win, that usually comes back to me. They may be on a position to help me win one day, or they're out there talking about me and sharing that, hey, Ken Coleman helped me. And I'll give you an example. So the story you opened up with, when you were telling me, that you watched all my YouTube because some guy told you about it. That's an example. I never met that guy, but I'm out here and I'm going to show up and I'm going to help people win. And I'm going to sit there and look at a camera and do my best to help people win. So I helped that guy win. And so what does he do? He says, hey, you need to watch this Ken Coleman guy. And so you start watching, and then you now have me on your show and you're helping me win. So that's the idea.
I love the fact that, and you touched on this briefly, that there's no measurement. There's no way to measure the impact that you can have by utilizing the law of reciprocity. The fact that Kyle introduced me to you, and I've introduced you to countless people, but the impact that you've had on me has allowed me to become a better coach, there's no way you could measure that type of impact, which is a beautiful thing. And I like how you talked about putting it out there. Maybe this is kind of a side note. I'll get back to some of the things I wanted to read, but I wasn't even planning on going here, but here we are. Can we talk a little bit about just your faith and how that plays into the way that you operate in the world? Meaning, I'll just quickly say this about myself. I've noticed that even though I don't consider myself a Christian, I won't get too far into that, but I consider myself a very godly man. And I've done a lot of work over the years, especially as I get older, with strengthening my connection with God and trying to always operate from a place where I'm thinking, what would God want me to do in this moment? And how can I tap into that type of energy with all of my efforts in trying to serve my fellow man? So anyway, I went off on a tangent, but I just want to get your thoughts on how you, on the role that God or your faith plays in your life.
Well, I do believe there is a God, and I believe he created all of us, and I believe Genesis. I believe the entire Bible. So if I believe the entire Bible and I believe Genesis chapter 2 makes it very clear that after Adam and Eve sin in the garden and they fall, if you will, and he punishes them, he then restores them and says, go and subdue the earth. And then the translation there, it's either the Greek or the Hebrew. I think it's the Hebrew. The word subdue means to go create. And so all work is a form of creation. If I say that work creates results. So just because you may not be in what is called creative work doesn't mean you aren't being creative with your work, because if work creates a result, you're being creative. So the creator creates man and woman, and he creates us to contribute. And so this is where the question comes, that every person on the planet at some point in their life starts to wrestle with. What should I do with my life? Why am I here? All right? That is a fundamental question that nobody has to teach a person to ask. We don't teach a toddler how to say no. They just figure it out. And we don't have to teach a person to wonder, why am I here? What should I do with my life? Where does that come from? I believe it comes from our soul. And that means that we have a spirit. And so I absolutely believe, because our creator was creative, he also created us to create, in other words, to contribute to the world through the world of work. So that's the fundamental theology that informs my philosophy, because my philosophy is based on that theology. Theology is, you were created to work. My philosophy is, we need to work to be well. If we aren't doing something that matters to us, we physically, mentally, emotionally, wither away. This is true. We know this from science. That's why you see a lot of old people go downhill after stopping working. And so there's some real truth to this. And so that's how my faith, so I believe everything I just said. So that's how my faith informs my work.
Wow. So one of the biggest things I'm taking away from that is how you're saying God, the ultimate creator, if we were made in God's image, then it's our responsibility to create. You didn't say it, but it was implied in what you're saying, that it's...
Oh, I tried to say it. You said it better than I did. I tried to say that, but you're absolutely right.
And that's what I get a lot from your content. That was one of the... I mean, I've taken so much, but one of the biggest things, one of the early light bulbs that went off when I was watching your content is, oh, it's not just about, I want to find work that's fulfilling so I can live a fulfilling life and I can be happy and I can find purpose, but it's also your responsibility to find the work that allows you to be your most creative so that that can have an impact on other people.
Yeah. I mean, that's it, brother. I mean, look, you can't, no, listen, even an atheist won't argue that they've wondered what should they do with their life. what am I just here to get a paycheck and then buy a house and get into a relationship, maybe have kids? Like, really? That's what this is about? And I'm not saying it's only about work, but I am saying that that work is a huge part of our lives because, simply put, we have to spend so much time doing it, okay, to pay the bills. And I think it should be so much more than that.
Ken, you just made me think of something else. I really want to get back to reading these quotes, but this thread run right now is too good. When you said your work, you made me think of something else that I've heard somewhere along the lines by watching your videos, or maybe this was even in the book, where you talk about the difference between basically your work, air quotes, work, doesn't necessarily have to be your job. The two can be separate, or your job can kind of allow you to do your work, meaning the creative work that you were put here to do. And sometimes you have to have a job, something that pays the bills, that unlocks your ability to do your work. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Let me pull it back and say this. There is, first of all, we need to have proper expectations of what that journey looks like. And I want to put this in context for your audience, if I could, because you're helping people that are athletes and they've known one thing and they're really good at sports and they've loved sports and they've dedicated themselves and they've succeeded on a level. And yet, because of the nature of the work, the job that they've been doing, the body gets older, right? And you got to move on. Is that a fair assessment of a lot of your audience?
Yes, sir. You nailed it.
Okay. All right. So what you have to do is you got to go, okay, this is something that I love deeply, but it was a job and it is hard work. Okay. And so there's a correlation there, but what we need to understand is that there is a season and there will be seasons of life where the job changes for any number of reasons. Right. And so what I've got to be able to do is step away from the job in that context. And I've got to go, what's the work? What's the work, the result? What am I going after? Now, for a professional athlete, there's a high level of achievement there that we're looking at. And they're driven by, motivated by achievement. That's pure and that's good. Okay. But what we also have to do is be able to go, okay, how do I go from that? And then I transition. And I've got to go, okay, what were the elements of this job that I loved, that I need to be feel alive? You know, I talk about the juice all the time. So how do I get that juice? You know, and athletes understand that. They're sick and tired of hearing coaches say that. But how do I get the juice back when I leave this one job that had all the juice in the world? And that's where you've got to get beyond the job and go, okay, wait a second. There's other types of work that I could do that would give me the juice. Is it the same amount of juice? Maybe not. But is it similar juice? Absolutely. And so that's why you see some athletes will go into sales because it's a competitive nature. You see some athletes go into investing and buying companies and entrepreneurial. That gives a very competitive type situation there. There's a lot of similarities there. You see some athletes go into coaching, some athletes go into teaching, instructing, you know, all those kind of things. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter what you go to, but you do have to have that correlation between, all right, this is a job, but I can't let it just be a job. It's got to be about the work. And the work would be, what do I love about it? What are the results that I want from this job? And that's the work I want to be doing. And when I can really hone in on that, the jobs will present themselves. I'm trying to answer your question, but also make it a little bit more macro. I hope I've done that. But that's how you've got to look at it. Because too many people look at transitioning from one job to the next job. And I think that that's too much of a short-sighted view. You know, I want to go, what's the type of work that makes me come alive? Now I'll find a job that allows me to do that. And that's how they need to correlate.
Thank you for fleshing that out a little bit more, because I wasn't even thinking about it from all those different angles. And I know the way you just broke that down, people will be able to take a lot from that, and that's stuff they can actually implement, not just listen to and be like, yeah, that's inspirational, but you can take what you just said and apply it immediately. What you just said about what are the results, and I think that was actually something I was going to get to that I highlighted. Okay. That's something that you don't hear a lot of people talk about, because I think oftentimes this pursuit of finding meaningful work is, at least on the surface, a selfish pursuit, unless you're thinking about the impact that it has. But when you talk about what are the results of this work that I'm doing, can you go into that a little bit more? Because I know there's many layers to that.
Yeah. So give you an example. I'll give you a couple examples. One example could be, I'm good with numbers. I love finance. I love work with investments and finance and all that. And so you could go, all right, I think I want to go to Wall Street. And you go to Wall Street and you're killing it. You got the slick suits. Maybe you're making seven figures, but all you're doing is trading and something's missing. Okay. So this is where we start to look at, well, what are the results of that work as a stockbroker? And then you, let's say you write them all out. And you got to look at those results and go, do those fire me up? And let's say in this example, somebody goes, you know what? That's a good game. I'm good at the game. I don't love the game because of win. I don't get excited about winning that game. Now, if I step back and I go, you know, I want to work with everyday people and I want to help them invest their money and see their dreams come true in the final seasons of their life. And you go, well, that's the result that I really care about. So I can still work with numbers. I'm good at it. I can still enjoy finance, but I'm going to trade maybe being an investment banker, you know, or trading corporate stocks or whatever. And I'm going to work with everyday people to make their dreams come true. Another example could be, I love communicating. I'm really good at communicating and I love speaking publicly. But I don't want to just go out and motivate people, you know, in corporate America. The results I really care about are, I want to see people learn and see people grow. And so I want to be more on the instruction side. So maybe I'll do corporate training, or maybe I'll be a college teacher or a high school teacher. The passion, you notice you back up from the results to the work. And so all work creates results. So the reason I always throw in results is because you may be doing work you love, but the results don't impact you in a deep, meaningful way. And they need to. You need to be doing work that you love, yes. So for me, I love to communicate. I love to coach people. I love to give commentary. But I don't want to give commentary on Russia and Ukraine. That's a result that, if I gave commentary on the Russia-Ukraine conflict, I'm not excited about talking about it. And if I gave the most enlightening analysis on it, and somebody said, Ken, that was a brilliant explanation of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, I would go, thanks. I don't care. I'm just saying, like, that's not my thing. Geopolitical conflict is not my thing. Those results, like, informing someone about that is not my thing. I like to equip people. I like to encourage people. And so anything that I do from a commentary standpoint must deliver those results, or else it's pretty empty for me. So I don't do sports broadcasting, by the way. I love talking sports. My publicist, Kurt's right here off camera. We talk sports all day long. I love sports. Can talk your ear off. But I experienced it. I did it early in the days when I was trying to figure out which way to go in broadcasting. And here's what I learned. The result of talking sports is entertainment. There's nothing wrong with that. But I'm not motivated to drive entertainment for people. And so that's an example of why results matter so much.
Wow. One of the biggest things I'm taking away from that is that just because you can do something, or you have a skill, or you have a natural talent for doing something, doesn't mean you should be doing that thing if, like you're saying, you're not excited about the results.
That's right.
So you mentioned athletes getting into sales. I actually started out in sales and, you know, I was making great money, but I realized I wasn't excited. That big commission coming in, of course, it's great. It was helping me pay the bills, live a certain lifestyle, but there wasn't any excitement there. And then when I started coaching, you know, other athletes, career coaching, life coaching, transition coaching, whatever you want to call it, I love that result, that feeling. When I watch you on your show, specifically with like the live call-ins, you're just so locked in. You love doing it. You love the result. If someone calls in and they're telling you about their situation. And they, by the time they're off the phone, you're helping them understand what actions they can take to get closer to clarity and closer to do their work. And I find that in my own life too. And that's when I realized that even though, you know, I wasn't making any money at first doing this and there was a lot of struggles, I was like, this is it. This is my work and I'm going to stay with this. So, anyway, I can go on about that. That was awesome.
Thank you very much for sharing that. Yeah. And what you just described is because, again, it's the combination of what I teach. When I'm coaching someone like that, I'm using what I do best to do what I love to produce results that matter to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's purpose.
Okay, here's a good one. Speaking of athletes, this is a good segue. So you wrote, if you have enough grit, you can always find an opportunity to get started right where you are. Let's talk about that one. That's a loaded statement right there.
Yeah. Well, most people never take the first step at the starting line. The gun fires and they never get out of the blocks. They never do. They spend their whole life staring at the finish line and they're watching everybody else run and they're consumed with fear, worried that something bad's going to happen. They're consumed with doubt, not believing that something good will happen. Pride, worried about what other people will think instead of focusing on what they know, what they believe. And so grit, that statement was just me saying, if you don't have the willingness to say, I'm all in and I'm going to take the good, the bad, the ups, the downs. I'm going to take the stalls, the starts, the restarts. I'm going to do it because I know it must be done and I know that I was put on this planet to do it. So I'm all in. There's a certain amount of mental grit that requires just coming out of the blocks. I mean, you think about it. Can you imagine some of the world's fastest sprinters when they were lined up in the starting block next to Usain Bolt? And you got guys like me with dad bods that are sitting back in my recliner and I got my elbow deep in a popcorn bowl. And I'm like, Usain Bolt's about ready to smoke these poor jokers. And these are some of the fastest people in the world. They know they're fast. And they still had to sign up and get up there and go, oh, I got to run against Usain Bolt. How about the guy that was assigned to guard Michael Jordan or LeBron James? That's who you got to guard in the NBA finals in front of the whole world? Are you kidding me? You know, it takes some grit to show up. The high-performing athletes have grit. They go, I know that I could get burned right here. You know, mm-hmm. I know that I could get, you know, crossed over on my fanny and then Jordan dunks on me or whatever, but I'm still going to go up and I'm gonna try to stop. It takes grit to sign up for an assignment of tremendous, tremendous proportion. And I think athletes are some of the best models of this idea of grit. It's like, okay, I'm either going to win or I'm going to lose. And it's possible that I get humiliated in the loss, but I'm still going to show up. Mm-hmm. That's grit.
Mm. It's funny how you mentioned that you don't, you know, you wouldn't want to be a sports broadcaster. But as I'm finding, I was just laughing to myself reading this next quote that I want to share with you from the book. You drop a lot of sports analogies or kind of like athletic language. And I'm laughing to myself, like as I'm highlighting these things, I'm not even realizing the things I'm highlighting can all be applied to athletes. And so let me just read this one. Relying on feedback to practice and improve isn't just for rookies. Relying on feedback to practice and improve isn't just for rookies. Can you talk about that one, please?
Yeah, so you're right. I love sports. And so anything that I write and speak, there's a lot of sports analogies in there because I think it's a great metaphor for life. So that statement is, you know what? That we tend to, as we grow and move on professionally, we lose that rookie spirit. Because the rookie, when the rookie comes in, the rookie knows, okay, I'm carrying everybody's jocks this week. You know, I'm doing this. I got to learn. I got to make the team. If you've ever seen those, you know, it's my favorite documentary on HBO every year, the NFL thing. What is it? I'm struggling.
Hard Knocks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love Hard Knocks, man, because they always focus in on those rookies and they always follow a couple of marginal rookies that like they may or may not make the 53-man roster. And so that rookie, man, they're wide-eyed. They're soaking it up. They're coming in early. They're asking questions of the position coach. They're sitting with the veterans on the field. If they're the good ones, the good rookies, man, they're asking questions, listening a lot. And so what I'm saying in that quote is That's not just for rookies who are trying to make the team. That desire to learn, that desire to get better, that desire to make sure that I'm noticed for output, that should stay with us at every level of our career. So just because I'm a two-time best-selling author doesn't mean I don't have anything to learn. I need to read books. I need to be talking to people, hanging out with people, interviewing people that are smarter than me, wiser than me, more accomplished than me. Why? Because that's the spirit of the rookie. In other words, it is a lifelong learner. And so that's what I'm simply saying, is that don't drop that wide-eyed curiosity and insatiable learning once you're no longer a rookie. Keep that spirit of the rookie alive.
Never lose that rookie spirit. I think that's a really strong statement, because I find myself, when I'm first meeting someone who comes to me and they're needing help trying to figure out who they are outside of their jersey, I always tell them, you have to think of yourself as a rookie in life, because you're going from the top of your field and whatever your sport is to you're starting this new thing and you have no experience. That's why I love what you said about keeping the rookie spirit alive, because if you can take that approach and humble yourself to say, okay, I don't know anything, or I don't know everything about this next chapter, this next venture. Let me, like you said, stay open or wide-eyed and curious and learn from other people and study the film, whatever the film may be in your industry. I think that was a really strong analogy you just gave.
Well, thank you.
All right, next one. Knowing when to pivot is a problem-solving skill that's absolutely critical. I want to say something about that, but please go ahead and then I'll remember it. I'll write it down.
Well, you know, hey, you're talking to an old point guard, and I emphasize the word old here. You know, a good point guard was always trying to get the ball down to the big man. Now, I come from, you know, I grew up in the 80s and 90s, so that's when big men played in the paint. In today's basketball world, big men, they want to shoot threes. But I'm used to that world. And so the analogy, the metaphor here from a sports standpoint is a good big man knew how to pivot well, you know, because I was the guard and I was always looking to get that ball into the post. I have a real viewpoint on this. And I played with a guy in high school who was a fantastic big man, and he just really used his body. He was thicker. He was about 6'5". In our small Christian school, you know, he was a big, big man, you know, but he was also big, but he was really light on his feet and great footwork. And so, you know, for our athletes out there, you understand this, I'm getting the ball in and he receives that and he's got the defender on his back. Now, when he receives that ball, the minute he receives that ball, before he moves, he's got two pivot feet and he gets to choose which one he's going with. But once he commits, he's got that pivot foot. Now he can do multiple things with that pivot, right? You know, he can swing forward, he can swing back, he can then do a step through. But that pivot foot and good footwork right there, and pivoting in a basketball in a low post situation, it's all about getting that defender off balance so that he can create a shot, right? That's the goal of a big man pivoting. So in that quote there, the idea of learning to pivot is a problem-solving skill. It absolutely is, because here's what we know. People who aren't good at dealing with change mentally, they get passed over because they're the ones that freak out, fritz out, they run away, and so they are unable to pivot mentally. So in a professional context, we're not pivoting physically, we are pivoting mentally. We are pivoting emotionally. What do you do when you have a bad leader or a leader who has a bad day and just craps all over you? And it wasn't your fault, they're not in a good place, whatever. How do you pivot from that, from feeling hurt and angry, which is normal? And how do we overcome that to where we go, you know what, I'm not going to take my ball and go home. I'm going to show up tomorrow and I'm going to rise above it. And I'm not going to let my feelings make me act out in a way that hurts my progress. We have a lot of young people now that their feelings are so sensitive. And so the idea of how do I pivot mentally when change comes my way? You talk about COVID. You talk about all the leaders that had to deal with unbelievable cultural change. You talk about pivoting, and that's the idea. I've got to move. I can't stay where I am. The vantage point, I was trying to go this way in business. I was attempting to do this professionally, and there's a defender, and I can't get through them. So I pivot. And so it's a mental and emotional agility that you must develop, and it is a problem solving skill, and you've got to learn how to deal with change mentally and emotionally.
You mentioned when you talk about COVID and what's going on in the world right now with a lot of layoffs, especially in the tech industry. What advice do you give to people, not just athletes, because I know the whole world is going through this. When you talk about someone who's been laid off or someone during COVID who, had the opportunity to just reflect and say, wait, where's my career going? What am I actually doing with my life? How do you encourage people? I mean, if they just listen back to the beginning of this episode, you've already given so much advice on that. But how do you encourage people to make a pivot when they're either trying to figure out what's next or they're going into a totally new field and they feel inexperienced?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. Anytime you start something new, you're going to be inexperienced. So being worried or being stressed about being inexperienced is silly. By the very nature of me doing something new, I am inexperienced. Mm-hmm. The only way to get experience is to do it. I would equate it to, if I could take everybody back to the emotions, the first time you learned to ride a bike, if you remember, you were kind of like, it was a cocktail. I don't know what the mix was for you, Taj. I'm going to say for me, it was probably 50-50, 50% fear of wrecking the bike and hurting myself, and 50% excitement of, I can't wait to ride a bike. I'll be free. I'll be a big boy. And so that's the cocktail of emotions. And that's just the deal. So I can be excited and scared at the same time. In fact, I should be on a regular basis. That tells me I'm stepping into new areas of growth in my life. And so I tell people all the time, especially young people that come to me and ask me about writing or speaking or broadcasting, I go, look, the first is the worst. The first show you ever do will be the worst. First time you do an interview on television will be the worst. First time you do a speech, it will be your worst. First time you write a book, it will be your worst. Why? Because it's the first time, and athletes get this. So I think athletes should be the ones that are going to go, well, I'm going to take myself back into my athletic career. And the first time I tried out for a team, or the first time I said, all right, I want to play this position or whatever. And look, you've been there before. And through practice and through game time and game film, you've gotten better. So for athletes, you have the formula for winning with this. Hey, embrace it, baby. Let's go. Hey, I've been playing inside linebacker my whole life. Now they want to move me to outside linebacker? Okay, you're going to suck the first few times in practice. But we're going to get you in the right position. We're going to get you in the film room. And you're going to have to get in some games. And you're going to have to get beat a few times. And so I think that's the same thing with pivoting into something new. Sorry. That's the price of admission.
Mm. You just made me think of something else where you talked about people who reach out to you for advice. And I think sometimes people, especially folks who are as prideful as athletes, not that there's anything wrong with ego. You need kind of an ego to be successful at a lot of things in life, especially to be great at your sport. But I think there's this hesitation a lot of times to reach out and ask for help or reach out and ask for advice. So you being someone who has reached out to mentors over the course of your life, and now to be in a position where people are constantly reaching out to you, can you give any advice or just words of encouragement to people who feel like, no, I don't want to look vulnerable or weak, or I'm afraid to reach out because I don't want to get rejected, whatever they're dealing with? I know you have some valuable things to share on that note.
Well, you just nailed the two reasons. So that was beautiful. So Taj just gave you the two reasons why we're reluctant to ask for help. Mm. The vulnerability, looking weak, bothering somebody. That's one reason. The other reason is we don't want to be rejected. We don't want somebody to say no or not return our email. And so that's all that is. So that's important to understand, because then we got to go, wait a second, let's look at the flip side of that. If I ask with the right posture, meaning humble and hungry, I'm humble in that I don't think I belong. I still have a place to learn. I want to learn from you. I would be blown away if I could get your insight on this. That's humble. And hungry, I really want to grow. I'm not where I need to be. I, 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 I suck at reading. I suck at reading this type of defense or whatever it is. Okay. And I'm not a good foul shooter, whatever it is. That hunger wrapped in humility is very attractive. And when you ask it that way, healthy people, which I would suggest would be most people that you would put yourself in a position to ask, I think they're gonna respond to that because they see that. It's very attractive. By the way, everybody's favorite thing is their own opinion. So what you have to do is reframe it from I'm bothering them to I'm honoring them. Because when somebody asks me my advice, I feel honored. I don't feel bothered. I feel honored. And I think that's true of most people. Would you say that's true of you, Taj?
100%, Ken. 100%.
So it's all in the posture. It's how I ask. And then you go, well, that's attractive. I think that they're putting themselves in a place of humility and hunger. And of course, I think I got something to say. I'd be happy to bestow my advice upon you, young grasshopper. You know what I mean? Everybody ends up taking on that posture. Why? Because we love our own opinion. So I think it's how you frame asking for help. And if you frame it that way, I think you'll be more bold.
I love what you said about hunger wrapped in humility. I never thought about it before. That's a great way to look at it, especially from an athlete's perspective. It's asking in that way. Not only is it a good way to approach someone, but it increases the likelihood that they will respond to you and want to help you. You know, and like you said, when it comes to wanting to help people, like most people you reach out to, like you said, if they're a good person, will probably want to help if you ask them the right way. You know, that's because I know what it meant. And I know this is probably the case for you. I love helping people or giving people insight when they ask me for it, because I know what it means when I've been on the receiving end of that.
That's right. And by the way, that's why you're more willing to help, because somebody helped you.
Yes. And then on the rejection piece, just like being afraid of the worst that happens is someone says no. You know, like I'm going to use myself as an example. I reached out to you because I admire your work. I've been following you for years. And one day I just got the nerve to say, oh, I'm just going to reach out to Kid and see if he wants to come on the show. The worst thing that happens is you just don't respond or you say no. And my life is no different. The best case scenario is I'm sitting here right now interviewing you. And this episode is going to help countless people. So
how did you reach out to me?
I forgot exactly what I said, but now that I think about it, it was probably because this is just how I'm wired, a combination of hunger and humility. I told you.
Was it Instagram?
LinkedIn.
You reached out on LinkedIn. Fantastic. I did. Fantastic. And I got to tell you, I'm not very good about responding to everything on LinkedIn. I'm spotty. So I'm really glad I saw your message. But the point is, you just hit me and I don't remember what I said other than said, sure, I'll do it. Right?
Yes.
But you must have said something that made me go, this guy is asking the right way. He's legit. Sure, I'll have a conversation. You probably told me a little bit about your program. And so you made a connection to unit where I would go, okay, I like that. I like that topic. You knew that about me. And so whatever you did there, and again, you go, okay, sure. Of course, you asked the right way. But most importantly, you asked. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think people understand how much greatness there is in boldness. Like, just be bold and a great result may or may not happen. But I promise you this, if you don't ask, nothing's going to happen.
Right. Man, we've talked about a lot of great stuff so far, but that segment about reaching out to people is probably one of my favorite things we've discussed. I hope you guys are really hearing this right now. Ken, I want to be respectful of your time. I have two more quick things that I have to read just to get your insight on this.
I'll be quick.
No, please. I could talk to you all day, but I want to make sure I get you off in the next 10 minutes. So even the smallest opportunity needs to be met with your best effort and hardest work. Really like that one.
Yes. Yeah, so this comes from two things. Being faithful in the little things. You know, it was a message that was driven into my brain by my mom and dad. And then just what I've learned from coaches, this was taught to me early on by my dad as I played sports and coaches. to this day, I'm a, and I'm such an old man. I know when I say this, but I don't care. I'm just a guy who believes in fundamentals. And the fundamentals are how you learn to play the game. And now I'll just use this as a basketball analogy because that's my favorite sport. My dad used to say that I was born with a basketball in my hands. I've always loved the game of basketball, and I'm, you know, 5'9", fully grown. I could barely jump over a piece of paper. So for a guy like me, to get playing time, I had to really get good at the fundamentals. Fundamentals on defense. In fact, the reason I got playing time in high school and was a starter is because I learned how to play defense, and it was fundamental. I learned how to move my feet. The defensive slide to me was my favorite drill in practice because it was my opportunity to play, because I knew that I was not the fastest. I couldn't jump high, but I was pretty quick and I knew angles. And if I got the defensive slide down and I could cut somebody off, that was a game changer for me. I used to love the drill where we worked through picks. Again, I was 130 pounds as a senior in high school, and so I couldn't go through a pick. I had to move over or underneath a pick. And the real, as you know, you basketball guys out there, you better get over that pick instead of underneath of it, or you're giving up a shot. So fundamentals, what does that mean? That means the details, the little things. Hey, the fundamentals of throwing a chest pass, the fundamentals of a good bounce pass, you know, doing it the right way so that it's accurate when you need it. The fundamentals, working on my left hand. I used to eat with my left hand for 4 straight years. I never ate with my left hand. Why? Because I wanted to be able to do a left hand layup when I needed to. You know, I needed to be able to dribble with my left hand if I got under pressure and it had to go to the left hand side. I didn't want to be a guy who was one handed and a liability. And so those are examples of little things that for a person who's not great, okay, those are required for me to get on the floor. For the great people, they're still required. But in order to be good, in order to be great, you got to master the little things. You got to be able to do the basics, man. And if I win with the basics, I get an opportunity to move up. And so that's why I said that. It's just so important that we don't overlook the little things. The very first few broadcasts I did were so little and so pathetic. You know, nobody even heard them. But I got confidence. I got experience from those little things. And that leads to what I get to do today. So that's the importance of that statement.
And we'll just leave it there. I have one more, and I think this is actually the perfect way for us to close out. To maximize your role, you can't just wait around for a chance to make a difference.
Yeah. There comes a point in every person's life where you're going to have to realize that while we all need other people's help to give us an opportunity, and we need help along the way, there are going to be multiple opportunities on that path where you're going to have to realize that nobody's coming to do it for you. Nobody's coming to open up that door. They're busy with their life. They're not sitting around thinking about how they can open up a door of opportunity. You're going to have to open it up yourself. And that's what I mean there. And, you know, you've got to realize that in order to move forward on purpose and make a difference through your work, there's going to come a point in time where it's just you, and you got to be okay with that. And it's get the, you pick the metaphor here, you know, the machete, it's you, and you know, you're in the right jungle. You know, you're headed the right direction, but there is no path, and you got to carve that path yourself. That's the idea here. And there'll be times where we get great assistance, but I find that most breakthrough comes as a result of our own initiative.
Just had to let that breathe for a second. What's next for Ken Coleman? What do you have coming up? Are you writing any more books? I know you're going to continue to impact people, and the show is always phenomenal, but anything that you want to share that you're working on right now?
Yeah, I'm not going to get into the details of these things, but working on two book concepts. One on which is a kind of a deep dive, a manual that goes with my Get Clear assessment and kind of walks people through, what do I do with my assessment results? How do I now turn this into a very clear path? And then looking at potentially doing a small book on four questions we need to ask and answer before we decide to quit. You know, great, great champions of life do quit things. I think there's a misnomer that, you know, quitters never win and winners never quit. And that's not true. We need to quit the right things at the right time. And so I'm developing a four-part question rubric, if you will. You ask and answer these four questions, and those answers will get you to a place where you can decide, yes, I should quit, or no, I should stay.
I like that. I love that concept. Don't let that go over your head, folks. For you guys listening, we need to quit the right things at the right time. That's huge. For anybody watching or listening, obviously Ken Coleman is not hard to find. You can just Google the man and find a wealth of information. But Ken, where do you like to point people to in terms of the best way to get in touch with you or just follow?
Sure. KenColeman.com. Get all of the connections to me on social media, as well as where to watch and listen to the show. And I am on LinkedIn, since we mentioned that. Obviously, I'm on Instagram at Ken Coleman. So I would love to connect there.
Awesome. This is going to be super cheesy, but I'm going to wrap it up with this. I've been doing this show for 4 years at this point. I've interviewed a lot of my clients. I've interviewed a lot of people who I consider my peers, people who are doing the same thing and, you know, serving athletes in some way. I've done a lot of solo episodes, but it's not very often. It's happened a few times. It's not very often I get to interview someone who I consider to be one of my heroes, or in this case, a mentor or a virtual mentor. So I want to thank you for spending time to come on here today. Very impactful on me. And I know my listeners will get a lot out of this, and I'm excited to listen back to this episode. I'm definitely going to watch this one back. So thank you, Ken.
Well, I am so humbled and honored by that. You're doing incredible work. You're having unbelievable impact, and keep it up, man. I'm happy to be a small part of it.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Ken. For everybody listening, this has been another great episode of Thrive After Sports. We'll see you on the very next episode.